I just got off the phone with Jay. Oh my gosh, so much value. I really can't get over it. It's really late right now. I stayed up late for the meeting and it was so worth it. I feel so clear on my next steps. I'm really starting a new business right now and need to be very clear and have clarity in where I'm going. And he laid out the process step by step, what I need to do.
I had the most amazing sales call, discovery call, power call, whatever you may want to call it, with JD yesterday. I am super impressed. I mean, I have closed so many people for high ticket offers, for group coaching programs. And sales has always been fun because I've never sold anything to anyone and it's been super amazing.
And actually just got off an amazing ninja sales coaching call with Jay. He really helped me to look through my sales process from beginning to end and gave me a lot of ways to improve it. He also took time to audit my webpage, and also there are quite a few things on there that I know now that I can improve that'll help my clients to know what it is exactly that I can offer to them.
I was struggling with closing my own high ticket deals. It would take me forever and to do a lot of follow up. And as soon as I had a coaching session with him, I jumped into the phone with one of my prospects and I closed the deal like in 30 minutes. Like the handling of objections, the questions that he asks, everything. I mean, seriously, work with Jay. Don't hesitate. He's awesome.
Jay is a madman. This guy is like a mad scientist, just all squirreled away in his little office, just dropping gold nugget bombs on people. Like, I didn't know what I expected when I got on this call, right? Because he says, I'm going to help you out with your sales process. That's not doing him any justice, because this was incredible. Truly and honestly, when I got on the call with him and he just got right to work. He was like, all right, what are you doing? What are your price points? All right, let's put it here. Here's a structure. Here's a framework. And then he sold me my own thing. Blew my mind. And it worked. I wanted to buy my thing. It's mine. It was incredible.
I had a call with Jay for probably, it was an hour and a half or two. And I now know exactly what my software does. And I made it. It's not like, but just talking to Jay, he was so good at just taking what it is, seeing the opportunity and the value and the real reason we are making it. And he gave me, the maker of it, literally insight on what it does. So I cannot say enough good things about Jay. If you're gonna be working with him, do it. And he's just so good at telling you what the real thing is with your business, taking insights, looking at the opportunity of something and seeing what the potential is that even you can't see. That's just absolutely amazing. Can't recommend him enough. Just jump in and yeah, just I'm still in awe how good that call was.
I would definitely 100% advise anyone who is looking to grow and scale their business, even start their business or their coaching program, to talk to Jay, because he got it. He can definitely help you out. Appreciate you, Jay.
Jay's the man. He's got such a great personality and lots of stories to tell. But on top of that, he'll dissect things like your landing page, your pricing page, and even your lead generation methods. And he's gonna give you real world examples on how to solve your areas of opportunity. So talk to Jay. You're gonna get a lot, you're gonna gain a lot. I sure did. And I'm very happy that I spoke to him, because now it just made me that much more confident to grow my business.
He is absolutely a dedicated team player who's always bringing up great ideas on how to improve things, how to make things better. He's very knowledgeable in the closing process, and I would absolutely recommend him for any position that you have.
And what I also love about Jay was just that it wasn't just a transactional experience. You know, it's the fact that he took the time to get to know a bit about my story, but also shared some of his story, and just being able to empathize with where he is in his business and kind of lining that up with where I am definitely, you know, makes me feel as though he's definitely someone I want to continue to connect with. And I definitely see myself having a good relationship with Jay moving forward. Jay's definitely the guy.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Jay, and this is the Sales Ninja Show podcast. And before I introduce my next guest, I'm excited to have you guys on here. And it's been over a year and a bit. It's been a minute to win it. Been busy growing businesses and helping my clients and helping grow my own business. So that's why I've been MIA. My apologies. I realized after putting a post, I think it was last week, if anyone was interested in joining the Sales Ninja Show podcast, you know, comment me. And then I think there was over 200 and some odd people that were interested in getting on the Sales Ninja Show podcast. So you guys have spoken and now we are delivering. Looks like I might have to go live, if not once a week, twice a week, maybe even every single day to be able to interview all of you amazing human beings. Before we jump in, I want to introduce a special guest, especially as the first reboot of the Sales Ninja Show podcast. Over a year, a hiatus of being able to record around 50 podcast episodes. Like I said, I took a break, got too busy for my own good. Wanted to get back to the reason for why I started my business, which is as a former pastor, introvert, to share stories of the entrepreneurial journey, the highs, the lows, the ebbs and the flows. And having struggled financially, you know, in my previous life, my whole why has been to, you know, eradicate or reverse generational poverty and to help people to sell more, to give more. So my first guest is a good friend of mine, the one and only Lefteris Kutinas, Lefty, who has been with me since almost the beginning of my journey as my cinematographer, having directed, produced, and edited all of my high-quality videos that I still use on a daily, even to this day. Since we both started, Lefty, as I affectionately call him, is my left hand. Sorry, I couldn't resist the pun. He's my wingman when it comes to film production, okay? And you can find us on a college campus, goofing off like a bunch of kids. You can find us downtown in the Distillery District in Toronto. And usually we'll have a large mango slushy bubble tea in our hands, chugging it down in between shoots. And if you're looking at producing your own documentary film or luxury brand videos, Lefty is your guy. I know I can't recommend this guy enough. And not to mention, he has gone to win a collection of film awards, which I don't even know. We'll ask him how many he's been awarded in a very short time, but no surprise. So we spent countless hours traveling, script writing, filming, doing more takeovers with a blooper vault that can fill a vast ocean. So I wanted to introduce you to Lefty, but before we do, I just wanted to thank you for tuning in to the Sales Ninja Show podcast. Give me a 1 second. Okay, here we are live with the one and only, the man, the myth, the legend, Lefty. How you doing, brother?
Good, man. Thank you for having me. How's it going?
Awesome. Now, that was quite the intro because there are a lot of things that you have done in a very short time. And, you know, your journey has been one of incredible feats. And I just wanted to even say live and thank you with some brother love bromance to say thank you for helping me with my brand, helping with my visibility, helping with all of my, you know, high quality video content that we've recorded over countless hours and days. You coming, you know, 2.5 hours to my home to film, you know, half a day at a time. So thank you so much, Lefty.
Yeah, you're welcome. Absolutely. And hey, I can't take all the credit. Okay. I'm where I am today also because of you. So I need everybody to know that as well.
Awesome. Awesome. So we're going to dive right in because I know that, you know, you have a bunch of calls to get on. So we're going to dive right into a couple of questions that really dig deep into the stories of the entrepreneurial journey, you know, the highs and lows, you know, the best practices of sales and the things that we're struggling with so that we can see how we can help serve, you know, our audience. So in this entrepreneurial journey, you know, Lefty, you've gone through a bunch of pivots and pivotal moments. So can you just share some of your, you know, what got you into what you are doing today? Like, was it like you got a hold of a camera or, I don't know what you were using when, if you were a kid or if you got access to some sort of, you know, photography in the beginning? What got you started?
Yeah, so my family dominated radio and television broadcasting for over 40 years between like 1960 something and the early 2000s. I didn't take that route. I ended up becoming a DJ, which led me to become a music producer, which led me to residencies and touring all over the world. Met my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, and I kind of wanted to go back to those family roots and kind of quit DJing. I threw myself a retirement party at 31 years old, where I played a 13-hour set straight. I did not stop playing music. And when I was making that transition, I knew that I needed to still be a creative person because I was a creative person for so long. So I sat down with my wife and I was like, I'm going to go crazy if I'm not creative. And we were getting married at the time. We were also looking for vendors to, that we were hiring for our wedding. One of them being a photographer and a videographer. So I ended up having a conversation with them and I was like, hey, you know, if I want to get into this industry, like, what's up? Give me the scoop. So we had a pretty good conversation, which led me to purchasing my first camera, Team Sony all the way.
Even from the beginning, Alpha and Omega. Okay, cool.
Yeah, always. I mean, hey, look, until I see Canon pictures on the big screen, Sony all the way. So,
is that right?
Well, I mean, every film that you watch is Sony pictures, Sony films. Right?
That's so true. Yeah, yeah.
So, I went through, started as a photographer, got really into that. Starting my young journey, even though I wasn't charging for my services, I knew that my time was valuable. So I always charged $100, even when I knew.
Really?
Yeah, I charged $100 right out of the gate. Like, I can't guarantee you the quality of photo that you're going to get, but if you need me to come downtown, park my car, have lunch, like, you're at least giving me $100 for my time. Like, that's something that I didn't budge on. And then of course, you know, as I actually got better, I started charging actual rates. And then I fell in love with, education and wanting to, teach people how I got the awesome, insane images that I used to get. Now I haven't touched photo in a little bit, so I'm probably rusty now. But at the end of the day, I kind of fell into YouTube, where I was like, oh, if I'm going to teach, let's go to YouTube. And lo and behold, I tried to change my branding and my marketing, and I ended up deleting that channel accidentally. But that's how I fell in love with video. Trying to teach photography, I fell in love with video. And I kind of let that go for a little bit. I left YouTube. I didn't want to do any of that. But it allowed me to kind of like get better with my craft. And that's kind of how I fell into the film industry. People till this day still call me a video marketer. There is a marketing aspect to what I do. But for the record, I am not a video marketer. That's where distribution comes into play. And that's a whole other ball game. It led me to, you know, working with commercial. And working with you and other coaches, which led me to the full-fledged documentary, the feature film that I did with Robert J. Moore last year, which had a Cineplex release, and doing a lot of bigger jobs now, which is great. And I feel like I just am slowly starting to step into my shell because, I don't know, I kind of realized a lot of the bad apples in the industry during this like 3.5 year period. And a lot of people sometimes are blinded by things, but I kind of had the direction of where I knew I wanted to go. And I'm not exactly where I want to be just yet, but I feel like I'm in the right direction.
So a lot of things that you said there that was really important. I just wanted to highlight, you know, the awesomeness of, you know, refining your craft. I don't know if you can share how young when you started doing photography and videography, because, you know, these kinds of skill sets are not made overnight. Like, what kind of time, what kind of discipline, what kind of practice is involved to get to the level that you're at?
Yeah, you know, I think if I was to like indirectly start my photography and videography journey, that probably started when I was 16 years old. I was, and it's because of building a persona through DJing. You know, I'm in the limelight. I'm performing in front of hundreds, sometimes thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of people. And, you know, the more that I evolved as an entertainer, because that's exactly what I was. I wasn't a musician. I wasn't a DJ. DJing was just the medium, but I always viewed myself as an entertainer. And how I got that role too was because every time I finished a show, that's exactly what people would say to me. They're like, oh man, like your show was amazing. Your show this, your show that. You really got us moving and blah, 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 blah. So I was like, okay, I'm going to drop the DJ role and I'm officially going to be calling myself an entertainer. And through being an entertainer and kind of growing my persona and my character and, you know, needing my own press kits and media kits and all that jazz, I became very comfortable in front of a camera, whether it was for photography or videography. And some of that footage I still have, the footage that I wish I had, you know, cameramen and all that weren't really doing that back then. So unfortunately, and smartphones didn't really have cameras either. So I wish I could have had a lot of the stuff that I don't have, but I'm blessed to still have the footage that I was able to salvage. So yeah, my journey in photography and videography has been like almost 20-25 years now.
Wow. So that's incredible. I think some people think that they can learn a craft and then just sell it really quickly. And I was on a call with a marketer who, you know, charges $100K per client without any apologies. And she basically said she does not like coaches and she did not want to get on a call with me. And I think she hasn't been on a call with another coach in the last 3 or 4 years because of the bad name that has been given to coaches who think they're going to become overnight gurus and sell their product when they don't really know what they're talking about. So that's why she didn't want to get on a call with me. Yeah. She got on a call and basically said, well, you seem to really know your stuff. And then she had a LinkedIn Live and she put me up at the LinkedIn Live platform where, you know, you get brought to the stage and said, Jay, you know, I just met this guy 30 minutes ago. He really knows what he's talking about with sales. You know, I want you to comment on that. Like, so what do you think about the whole, you know, coaching space where there are, you know, quote unquote, overnight gurus, overnight people who are, you know, promising you 10,000 leads in 3 nanoseconds and trying to sell you stuff when they don't even really know what they're talking about. What do you think about this whole, because even with like brand visibility, people can get duped and get ripped off. Like,
yeah.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think the coaches that are the ones that have the bad name, of course. You know, I think the problem is that the buyer is duped into this world of instant gratification where you almost put a boundary or like a wall in front of these individuals that are trying to just have a business and kind of like build towards something that they can leave for their families, but they're taught to not see past 60 days or 90 days. It's like when I'm on a call with somebody, it's not, hey, Jay, I have an idea on how I can make you $10,000 next week. No, I'm getting on a call where it's like, hey, Jay, I think if we do this, you could probably generate $10 million in the next 20 years, right? So it's more of, like, I always say a story well told is a brand well sold. And I think the problem is that people are so inclined to put the sale first rather than their brand first. And I feel like that's kind of, you know, I have my bad months. I've had terrible quarters, never mind just months. But I think the reason why people are still gravitating towards what I do is because I'm leading with brand first and sales second, right? Obviously, you know, sales are important. I need money to grow and do the things that I love and continue to do. But it's very important for people to realize if you got to create something that isn't tied down to an algorithm. It's not tied down to what a trend is. It's still going to be visibly acceptable even 10, 15, 20 years down the road. And I believe that I had that beautiful opportunity to do that with Robert J. Moore. You know, he's still a young guy, but if he had another 20, 30 years or more in his pipeline, you know, that's a project that he gets to share with people over and over and over and over again. And it's not going to ever go stale. And I think people need to start focusing more on what can you do in the next 30 years versus what can I do in the next 30 days?
Hmm. So can you share, you know, people knew you as a video marketer, a VSL, you know, guy, in which you have pivoted since. What made you pivot? And I almost feel like when you hear those words, you just, it causes like an aversion where you're like, ew, stop that, right? Stop saying those things. What made you pivot? And that's a pretty major and significant pivot.
Yeah. So when I first got into the coaching space, again, I came from the film industry, right? So I had no idea about the names that people were dropping me. I had no idea about lingo and what this asset is and what that asset is. And I remember speaking with Jim Beard, who he was in the video sales letter space. And I always looked at VSLs like commercials, not so much like talking heads, where it's like, hey, I'm so-and-so, I do this, buy my product. Like I always like looked at like actual commercials on television and thought, how can I create a VSL out of this? It was kind of different, but it came to a point where in 2000, I think it was 2021. Yeah. Just after COVID 21, 22, where that all of a sudden video was like the big boom, right? It's like, oh, if you didn't have video, you were nothing. You were a nobody.
Yeah, yeah.
You're this, you're that, right?
Yeah.
And it just happened that the problem that I saw and the problem that I also dealt with was if I created a video for you that you put on your landing page that you booked calls with, but you couldn't close the deal, somehow mm-hmm. it was my fault.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the video was the first touch point, it's your fault that I didn't close a sale. Your video sucks. You're this, mm-hmm. you're that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I did it for a little bit. And I'm not going to mm-hmm. say that all my clients were bad apples. I had a lot of amazing clients, more good ones than the bad ones. Mm-hmm. But the bad ones that I did have kind of led me to be like, you know what, man? I'm not responsible for your sales, right? Like I'm responsible to give you the tool in order to help you book the calls, which could lead to sales. But my tool has nothing to do with your sales. Right. And at that point, I just, you know, that was at the time where I was working not so much on documentaries and storytelling, but I also kind of looked back at my at the arsenal of footage that I've already created for a lot of other clients of mine. And I was like, story this, story that, story this, story that. And I was like, well, how many VSLs do I really have in my arsenal? Not many, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. I had more than a handful of story documentary videos. So I was like, huh, the story videos that I'm doing, those people have never once said anything about sales to me, but they definitely have spoken about branding. And that's mm-hmm. when I decided to make the shift. And when I made the shift, I lost a feeling that in my 37 years of living, I never had in my life, which was anxiety. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, when I started getting anxiety, being on calls and meeting up with clients in person, I was like, screw that. I don't want to feel like this for the rest of my life because I want to create video sales letters. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just shifted and pivoted, and the projects got bigger. The clients got even more amazing, and I'm so happy for the future ahead.
Awesome. So I have a couple of questions because I know you got to get going soon. But for those of you who don't know who you are, maybe pronounce your full name and then the way that people call you, the way that I call you, and then share what your offering is, because I think a lot of people may not know who you are, what your offer, who you're trying to reach. And with that, you know, it's important, I think, to leverage storytelling and personal branding and what makes them different and what makes you different in terms of your offerings to, you know, a competitive market.
Well, my name is Leftedis, but my friends call me Lefty, and I am an award-winning documentary filmmaker that's here to help you leave a legacy that impacts millions. What makes me different is simply you're choosing a director that's right for your job and right for your line of work and your film. You wouldn't choose Martin Scorsese to direct Avatar the same way you wouldn't choose James Cameron to direct Goodfellas. So that's nice. Kind of what differentiates me in the marketplace. And I don't see myself having competition because of that, because I am not the same as the next director and the next director and the next director. We all have different visions. We all have different eyes. We all have different ways of capturing things. So when you do come work with a Lefty production, you know that you're getting something custom and tailor-made that is only coming from these beautiful bad boys right here.
Now, I mean, clearly you have collected a bunch of awards and trophies along the way in a very short time.
Yeah.
So for people who are interested in, let's say, you know, filming a documentary or telling their story, you know, how can your storytelling production help them, you know, with their sales? It may not be like an overnight thing. And like you said, it may not help them get more leads where, you know, the problem could be on their end where they're not closing the sales. So let's just forget about that just for a minute. But the legacy, the impact, and the branding, how can storytelling and your brand visibility with filmmaking, for example, with like documentaries, how can it help them with their sales and with their impact?
Yeah, before I started getting into like the workforce, whether I was going to be an entrepreneur or not, I was 14 years old and it was just, well, you know, I was turning 14. So I was just getting into high school. And I remember my grandfather sat me down at the time and he said these words to me that have stuck through like till this day and are never going to go away, which is, if the people love you, you'll never be out of work. And that right away just really stuck with me because it's true. Like, you don't, like, do you hire me because of the work that I do, or do you love me as a person? Do you love being around me? Do I make you feel good? Do I, you know, share personal stories that you're just truly interested in? And I think, you know, they always say, like, you know, they say people buy people, but I think really people buy stories, right? So that's why story, like your story, no matter how big or small you are, no matter how many times you've told it or how many opportunities you haven't had the chance to say it, It matters. Your story matters. And I hear this kind of all the time where it's like, oh, you know, I just started my business. I don't think I'm ready yet. I'm not ready for this. I don't have enough experience or whatever the case might be. And the thing is, from the moment you can walk, talk, and recollect a memory, you've been building your story. So your business experience might be an infant, but you could probably tell me stories from the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years of your life. And that's what people are going to buy you on. And I think that's a beautiful thing because, you know, there could be a million coaches, there could be a million filmmakers, but we all have different walks of life. We all have different experiences, different, backgrounds, especially ethnic backgrounds, right? cultural differences. Like there's just, there's so much awesomeness in this world that you got to kind of leave behind what it is that, you know, people are telling you to share about, you know, your business and start focusing on the story and what you've gone through and your personal experiences. And you're going to see some incredible things no matter what stage your business is at.
Mm, amazing. So, you know, with the pivot and, you know, with you getting all these different awards and doing all these different projects, what is the, you know, 30,000 foot, you know, picture of, you know, years down the road where you look back and say, you know, this is my dream goal of working with, you know, ideal client or dream client or companies. Can you paint a picture of what that looks like so we can have a vision for the kind of work and the gift that God has given you to make these incredible documentaries and or films? Just paint a picture if you can.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the people that I'm going to work with, that one's tough. That one's tough to answer. But you know, the thing that I'm really happy about is that, you know, Martin Scorsese, for example, who's one of my favorite directors, you know, he's in his 80s and he's still producing films, right? So I think I find that really magical that I don't necessarily have like a retirement date. I can work as long as, like, you know, God lets me breathe. But in terms of like the direction for, like, let's say the next 30 years, you know, I've gone from a basic camera operator and filmmaker, which I'm still a filmmaker, but I've taken more of a director role. And I want to see my director role turn more into a production distribution role, because I think big budget films should be made accessible to everybody. And I want to be able to be the person that, you know, somebody turns around to me with $100,000 idea, $1 million idea, $10 million idea, whatever the case might be, and be like, yeah, that's cool. I'll back that project. I'll fund it because I can. Right. I think the same way, like Alex Hormozi made education accessible to everybody, I want to be able to, bring Hollywood and filmmaking and Netflix style projects accessible to everybody, in which I can then, you know, be able to fund and back those projects for those individuals.
Awesome. Now, what was your favorite movie? I know that's a hard question for a film buff, and why? And would it be a Martin Scorsese film as well? Or?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The two movies that I can watch over and over and over again are Goodfellas and The Wolf of Wall Street. Those two I can watch like over and over and over again. I know Goodfellas is more of a mafia movie, but there's just so many twists and turns and just stories within stories and just the way everything unfolds. Martin just has a really incredible way of bringing his adaptations to life. And I feel like the reason why I gravitate towards him too is because all his films, whether you guys know this or not, 99% of them are actually based on true stories.
99%.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's really cool.
So they're all based on true stories. Wolf of Wall Street was based on Jordan Belfort. The Goodfellas was based on a certain Italian crime family. Bronx Tale, another crime family all that, and the whole mafia thing. So he always has real world experiences and the things that not only he has lived, but other people have lived. He brings those real world scenarios into his films, and that's what I love him for.
I love that. So I think there's power in leveraging, you know, true stories, because sometimes we don't even know that they're true stories unless, like, you know, it was a at the intro, adaptation from a based on a true story, or you know, when it says based on a true story, and sometimes you don't even find out until after, and then and you're like, wow, that was great! Like it was such an amazing movie, and the fact that it was actually a true story or based on a true story or adaptation, you know, based on a true story, you just like the impact even, you know, goes like 10 to 100 x. So because this is a Sales Ninja Show podcast, I have to ask the question. You know, The Wolf of Wall Street being one of your favorite movies, right? What was your reaction to the selling approach? Because, you know, everyone has a different preference. Everyone has a different, you know, approach to sales. What did you think? What was your reaction?
It was that was the time, right? That was the time. I mean, sure, maybe there was like 1% of people that might have done the whole NEPQ style back then, but it was probably even a quarter of a percent of people back in that day. But I don't know, there's something thrilling and exciting about that boiler room style of selling that I feel like I'm always going to enjoy, right? I can be a little rough around the edges at times where I'm a bit cutthroat, where it's kind of just like, hey, Jay, like, are we doing this or not? Like, what's up, bud? Right. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think it really stems down to the personality of the person. That style of selling, you know, I'm sure it still exists till this day. But you just gotta really know that person's character inside out, right? Like, like Dan Pena, for example, like,
oh my God,
that guy created the boiler room. You know what I mean?
You're not
gonna turn to a guy like that and just be like, hey, you gotta start doing NEPQ selling. The guy's gonna, you know, tell me where to, you know, he's gonna tell me where the sun don't shine. So I think you really have to want to enjoy that style and get like a thrill from that experience. And I think nowadays that's exactly what it is. It's an experience. I think there's, you know, too many people out there that are collecting participation trophies. And I feel like we need to bring back winners and losers. that's my opinion.
My gosh. I wish we had more time, but I know you got it going. So Dan Pena, you know, he's like balls to the wall sales approach, right? Like, I mean, if you ever, I think you may have introduced me to him. And when I listened to his boiler room reel videos, I thought it was like a reenactment, but I was like, this guy's like red in the face, getting mad in his own mastermind with people who are not listening to him. Yep. And he is just like something else. But there's something about being that effective, you know, it's almost like even that high testosterone where, when I talk to a lot of female entrepreneurs, they absolutely hate the bro marketing and bro sales. Sure. You know, any thoughts to that as you know, we conclude here in the Sales Ninja Show podcast, because there are two different, you know, audiences where we have male and female, and females or a lot of them, the ones that I talk to, are really, really, you know, not liking the bro marketing approach. Any thoughts?
Well, first and foremost, the majority of my clients are women. So kudos to all the ladies out there. I love working with all of you. I think the problem with the bro marketing is like here's the reality, or at least this is my opinion on the reality, is that even in the coaching industry, it's still a very male dominated industry. And at the end of the day, like, again, from my opinion, the one major thing that women want to know is that we're just listening. Like, we're just taking the time to like listen to them and understand where they're coming from. And bro marketing obviously definitely does not do that. And I think that's another reason why the majority of my clients are women too, is because allowing them to have a space to share their story and kind of just, you know, let everything out that they want to let out. I kind of give them that platform on top of the other platforms that they have to do that and kind of have their voice heard and break free from the male dominated market. And I will always take on women clients because of that. Again, there's women out there that have that like that type of like dominant style selling. My wife came from that kind of boiler room style selling, but at the end of the day, it's like she doesn't want to be like talked down to or hard pitched to, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it really just stems down to personalities, and it stems down to how they are as an overall person. And if you understand that the intention of what they're doing is not malicious, then okay, cool, go with it. But yeah, I think first and foremost, you know, bro marketing doesn't work on women because, you know, they want to be heard. They want to be listened to. They want to know that you actually are registering what's being told, and, you know, that you understand that you can execute on what it is that's being said. And I feel like a lot of people don't do that, especially us as men. We kind of still have this, you know, dominance about us. Mm-hmm. That doesn't always work. And at the end of the day, guys, like, leave the egos at the door, man. Just shut your mouths and open your ears. That's it.
Woo, that was good. That was spicy. Yeah. Awesome. What was that? Do that again. Oh, I thought you had like a shaker. I didn't see your finger. Yeah, you got some fire on that. So how can people get in touch with you? Because, you know, people are looking at documenting, didn't know that you were, you know, doing this kind of thing. Filmmaking, you know, I think there was a part of it where there's some companies, whether it's a brick and mortar or even online, where they're looking for some sort of brand visibility or some, I don't know what you call it, but I know that you had put some sizzle reels to help them with their brand videos. I don't know if that's something that you also offer. How can people get in touch with you? And do you offer those things, those kinds of services?
Yeah. So I've now started doing cinematic mission statement videos, which are really, really cool. Truth is, they only make sense if you're local, just due to the nature of the quickness and the low ticket that it is. You'll probably end up spending more on a plane ticket and an Airbnb than you will on the service. Other than that, how to find me? You can find me on YouTube, which is now my brand new landing page, which is Your Legacy Filmmaker. I believe my name is also right there. And Facebook or LinkedIn at Lefteris Cutinas. I'm
amazing.
Pretty sure I'm the only Lefteris Cutinas. So if you happen to find another one in and around my age range, please share the profile with me. I'd love to see who that is.
Awesome. So thank you guys for tuning in. Join the free Facebook group if you're looking for more resources on how you can sell more to give more. And if you're looking at jumping on this podcast, we did a post last week and I think over 200 people raised their hands. If that's the case, then we're going to have to go, you know, more than once or twice, if not three, four, five times in the week to be able to hear your stories, just as we were sharing with Lefteris or Lefty, as he's well known as, to see how we can help document and film your award-winning story better than a Netflix documentary. So I love watching Netflix documentaries and there's so much impact. Again, a couple of highlights that I got from Lefty today is if the people love you, you'll never be out of work. People buy people and people buy stories. So any last words before we say goodbye to the audience in the Sales Ninja podcast?
Yes, we are in a dying market for content. So if you are actually thinking heavily and thoroughly about putting out a documentary film for your business and brand, we've gone from literally hundreds of films and shows being streamed on Netflix, Paramount, Hulu, Peacock, Prime, you name it, to I can count them on how many fingers and toes I have. These platforms are in a crisis for content, and it is probably the best time in history to jump on and think about really building your legacy in 2024 and moving forward.
Amazing. that brings us to the end of our Sales Ninja Show podcast, the first reboot after it being in a hiatus for about a year and a half. So Lefty, on behalf of the Sales Ninja Show team, really want to thank you for everything that you've done to help me with my brand and with my videos, my visibility, my content. And for everyone, if you are looking for a documentary or award-winning filmmaker or cinematic producer to help you with your videos and your brand, you definitely need to get a hold of Lefty. And thank you for tuning in, everyone, to the Sales Ninja Show podcast. Remember to sell more so that you can give more. Peace out. Thank you.